Hello, everyone, and welcome to Straight from the Heartland. I'm Pam Frutwell.
It's my pleasure right now to have Ms. Polly Dobbs of Dobbs Legal Group. First of all, explain the difference between contingency planning and estate planning.
Hi, Pam. Thank you for speaking with me today. So, when folks come in for estate planning, they think they just need a will and that's it. And one of my themes is that it's so much more than just a will, and really you need a foundational set of documents. So when you say contingency planning, what I understand is having something in place in case you don't die. I hope that you just drop dead. I hope you just don't wake up one morning and that it's a nice, clean, peaceful exit. But unfortunately for a lot of folks, it's a slow decline and they become unable to manage their own affairs, but they're not dead yet. So in that contingency, it's so important to have some documents in the drawer that can come out, giving others authorities to act on your behalf. So in that contingency, a good power of attorney for finances and for health care will empower others to act on your behalf when you are no longer able to do so. And from an estate planning perspective, you know, where your assets are going to go upon death and who's going to be in charge of that process, it sure makes a lot of sense to have the same person who's named in the power of attorney for finances during lifetime, who's handling your affairs when you become incapacitated towards the end of your life, have that be the same person that's empowered in the estate planning documents to oversee the distribution of assets. It makes it nice and seamless, and those documents ought to be coordinated and complement each other.
What are the key components? You talked a little bit about the wills, but what are the key components in a will?
So you need to write down your wishes. If you don't, your state will write a will for you, and they don't know what you want. So in your will, it's key to say who's going to be in charge, who's going to get what, and most importantly, it's important for your will to be fresh and current and not covered in 3 inches of dust from 30 years ago, but that it reflects right now, if you died, who would you want to get your assets, who gets which assets, you know, careful thought to who gets what. It doesn't have to be equal ownership in everything. I encourage everyone to define in their heart what is fair, not equal, fair, and then write it down. Here's who gets what, and here's who's in charge. That way, nobody has to wonder. It's all laid out, nice and clear instructions.
So give me an example of that different thing of fair versus equal, because I know you've talked a lot about that. So what are you talking about when you're saying what's fair versus what's equal? Give me an example.
So for most folks, it would be an absolute disaster if the children inherited the farm ground as equal tenants in common. That's what the vanilla plan gets you. If you don't have a will or you have a simple will that says everything equally to my kids when both my spouse and I are deceased, they become equal tenants in common. And it's not a majority rules scenario. So many people misunderstand that. When you are a tenant in common, even if you just own a minority interest, you have very strong rights in how that land is managed, in being able to force a sale, a partition sale. So if you're a 1/5 tenant in common and you don't like that anymore, and if your siblings won't buy out your 1/5, you can go to court and the judge will order a sale and you'll get 1/5 of the resulting cash. So if that's not the overall plan for the family farm, then something better than that vanilla, everybody gets equal interest, is what ought to be put in place. So one example would be you separate the operational assets from the bare land. So you separate the grain bins and the equipment and the machinery and the bins and the dryers are separate in a different entity that's going to be owned by the farming successor child. Maybe that child buys it. Maybe that's a chunk of their share, so that means they get less of other things. Or maybe it's just free off the top. The generation right in the plan feels like that's fair, that child who has worked so hard ought to get that off the top. But again, it's different for every family to define what is fair. And then the bare land, well, that can be divided among the children differently. After we have separated out the operational assets, it makes it a lot easier. Maybe the other kids are landlords and they have cash rent checks that they cash. Or maybe there's some kind of crop share arrangement. So they're still involved, but they don't own a chunk of the operational assets because they're not the ones at home. For super high net worth families, the planning's easy. I leave the farm to child A and the beach house and the lake house for summer and winter to child B and a whole bunch of marketable securities that are sitting in the bank to child C. You know, pick and choose who gets what instead of letting everybody inherit a partial share of every asset.
Again, that's Polly Dobbs. We'll hear more from Polly in our next show here on Straight from the Heartland. I'm Pam Frutwell.